wrapping up a Jack's class in Proverbs, and so I was thinking, giving some thought to where to go next in terms of a series. I like to do series. I think it's fun, and it gives us kind of a path to follow. And so we had gone and done several series lately in, from the New Testament. Had a series from Hebrews, and now we're into Ephesians. Been a little while since we had a series from the Old Testament. And I believe where we left off on the last series of the Old Testament was in the life of David. And so having completed the life of David, we kind of moved on into a New Testament series after that. And I thought, you know what, let's go back to the kings. There's so many great stories from the kings that come after David. And so what I hope to do over the next few weeks and months is just visit some lessons we can learn, and that gives us, there's a ton of material there, there's some fascinating stories, there's some good prophets, there's just some really great stuff in the life of the kings. So that'll be on Sunday nights with our regular series from the Psalms sprinkled in. That's the plan. So we can hopefully be looking forward to studying that together. So in the first one, of course, if we leave off with David, that brings us to Solomon, his son. And that's where we're going to pick up. And man, we can, there's quite a few things we can say about Solomon. We know quite a bit about him. And he's written, obviously, a lot of the wisdom literature we just studied. And so there's some great lessons we can learn from the life of Solomon. And his story really begins in 1 Kings chapter 2. The book of 1 Kings picks up with the end. It's kind of interesting because it begins in chapter 1 with the very end of David's life. And I guess almost, I don't really know why it's broken up the way it is in terms of the way that the book is organized, but it starts with the end of David's life as an introduction to the beginning of the rest of the kings, starting with Solomon after that and then going on. And so as we look at that, and we come to chapter 2 in the passage that Lee read for us, David was kind of commissioning his son Solomon and was giving Solomon some instructions. This is the passage that Lee just read for us. We can only imagine David taught him a lot of things. This is kind of a final reminder of what it's all about and what he needed to do as king. And I want to emphasize verse 3, that he needed to keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways, keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all you do wherever you turn. And if he would do this, then God would keep his promise to keep one of David's descendants on the throne, if they would be careful to pay attention, to walk before God in faithfulness. And so that was David's charge to Solomon. And as we continue reading and we see the beginning of Solomon's reign in chapter 3, there's a couple of things that are said that introduce a couple of themes that we'll trace through these stories. One of them is in the very beginning of chapter 3 that David went and took a wife from the daughter of the king of Egypt. And that, as you know, sets a pattern that's going to lead to a lot of trouble in Solomon's. I said David, I meant Solomon. Solomon takes a wife, the princess of Egypt. And that's going to cause him some trouble. But the next thing that's said in chapter 3 has to do with the people and Solomon worshiping God on high places. And that's an interesting theme that weaves its way through the life of all of these kings. And so in tonight's lesson, what I want to do is just kind of, as we sort of introduce the subject, and is to do this sort of survey lesson of this theme of the high places. I want to show you how that shows up by just spotlighting these high places throughout the lives of these kings and what it means and the problem there and some lessons that we can learn from. So we see that right off the bat in verse 2 of chapter 3, it said the people were sacrificing at the high places, however, because no house had yet been built for the name of the Lord. So just a little bit of review. You remember that David rejoiced when he brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem after a failed attempt to do it on the cart. Then it stayed for a long time in somebody's house, and then finally he was able to get guys to carry it like the law said. And they brought it in on their shoulders, and there was much rejoicing, and David pitched a tent for it in the city of Jerusalem. Well, that was where they had been worshiping, but they didn't really have a temple, and the tabernacle itself was not there. It was on another mountain, which we'll see in a moment. And so the people in this meantime, until they got the temple built to have a central place, the people would just sort of go wherever to worship. And where they normally ended up was up on a high place. And that seems kind of natural. Even Jesus, you know, went up on a mountain to pray. And I was thinking of the high place behind Jeff and Leah's house. There's a high place. You know, you can walk up the hill. And it's nice because you get up there and it's kind of quiet and you can see. And I think we all kind of naturally feel like, you know, you get somewhere like that and you just kind of put you in a different frame of mind. So it's easy to understand why people would naturally seek out some place, maybe a high place, to go up and then worship God there. And the people were doing this at this time because there's no house built. There wasn't like a place that was designated for their worship. And we're told that even Solomon engaged in this. Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. Only he sacrificed and made offerings at the high places. The king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was a great high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night and said, "Ask what I shall give you." And you know that story. Solomon asked for wisdom. So that's another great lesson we could circle back to. But the point I want to make is at Gibeon, and you'd have to go to the Chronicles account to see this, but at Gibeon is where the tabernacle that had ended up. So it's interesting that the tabernacle, the tent of meeting with the altar that had been made for it, was at Gibeon, whereas the Ark of the Covenant was in Jerusalem. So things were kind of out of kilter. And they stayed that way until that Solomon got the temple built. And then finally you had the Ark of the Covenant back in a place. You had a house for worship. They had the altar. They had all those things at the center at Jerusalem. But when he starts to rule, because David had not been allowed to build the temple, you kind of have this weird arrangement where the tabernacle's over there on Gibeon and the Ark of the Covenant's in Jerusalem. And so Solomon goes up there to worship at this place. And God appears to him there. Notice that good things are said about Solomon. He loved the Lord. And he was walking in the statutes of David, his father. He was doing good so far. But notice that it makes this as an exception. Only, see how it's set apart as an exception? He was doing good except. What was the exception to that general statement? He was worshiping at the high places. Now, what was wrong with worshiping at the high places? To see that, let's go back to the law of Moses. And in Deuteronomy 12, Moses here is, in Deuteronomy, they were about to enter into the land. Moses wasn't allowed to go because he, hit the rock, lost his cool, didn't honor God. So the whole of Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law as the people are getting ready to go into the land. And so Moses is giving them all these instructions, like a parent to a child. Now, when you get there, be sure you say thank you and be sure, you're giving them these last minute things that are walking out the door. And Moses is sort of giving them the law and sending them into the land. And he says, and of course, it's the Lord speaking through Moses. These are the statutes and the rules you shall be careful to do in the land the Lord your God is going to give to you. You shall surely destroy all the places where the nations whom you dispossess serve their gods on the high mountains, on the hills, and under every green tree. So here's the interesting thing. Those people who had lived in the land before the Israelites had built altars to their gods on every high place, on every hill, all over. The land was covered up in these altars to false gods on all those high mountains. He says, when you get in there, first of all, you go find any of those altars to those false gods and get rid of those things. Secondly, he says in the very next, continuing in that, I think I didn't have verse 3 on there, but in verse 4, you shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. But you shall seek the place that the Lord your God will choose out of all your tribes to put his name, make his habitation there. There you shall go. There you shall offer your burnt offerings. There you shall offer all of your worship. So he's saying to them, listen, here's what the people of the land do. They all just go wherever they feel like it, and they worship their gods wherever they like. They go all over the place, and that's what they do. You're going to be different. Don't be like them. Here's what I expect out of you, God says. I'm going to pick a place, and the place that I pick is where I want you to go. And that's where you're going to worship. That's where you're going to offer your sacrifices. There's going to be one designated place. So he warns them here, don't be like the people. But as we see, when the story of Solomon is first beginning, not only were the people, but Solomon himself was making offerings at the high places not just at Gibeon where the tabernacle and the altar were, but places plural, which lets us know that he was going to these places. So it seems like what's happening here, at this point, he's not worshiping false gods. I think what was happening was that the people of Israel, maybe taking a cue from the people who had been there before them, maybe because it was just much, much more convenient. I'm not sure why. But instead of going to the trouble of going to the place that God said, here's where you're going to offer the offerings, instead, would just go to a high place and worship God there. I think they're worshiping the one true God. They were just doing it in their own place. It'd be like, again, to pick on Jeff again, it'd be like, you know, if Jeff and Leah, instead of going to the place where they designated, just had their own little place, they'd go up there on the hill and they'd worship there. So everybody's kind of finds their little place and they goes to worship God. Which doesn't sound terrible, but it's always mentioned as an exception to the rule of being following the instructions that God had given them. They did what was right, except they offered at these high places. So it's kind of, you know, and it seems like God kind of winked at it. He overlooked it. He was merciful to them. But it's mentioned over and over and over as being something that was not quite in keeping with the rules and the law that God had given them for worship. So what's interesting is Solomon appears to start this as a king going to the high places. And we can follow that through his descendants. And that's what I want to show you tonight. This is a list of the kings of Judah. Seven of the kings of Judah were, we call, good kings. The ones in blue. The others were rotten. And really, a lot of them were kind of a mixed bag. But of these, only seven of those kings were good kings. But in all but two of them, and we'll see which ones they are, it says the same thing about these high places. So let's just walk through these real quick. Asa, to begin with. Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, as his father David had done. He got rid of all these idols. That's what they're constantly fighting against, the temptation to worship idols. He even got rid of his mother from being queen mother because she was worshiping an Asherah. He said, you're fired. Asa cut down her image, burned it in the brook Kidron, but the high places were not taken away. It's like they did good. They got rid of all these false things, but there were still the high places where they would go to worship. And that, it's like he did good except these high places. Nevertheless, his heart was wholly true to God. So even in spite of that, he was still, in his heart, he was true to God, but he didn't take care of those high places. Jehoshaphat, same thing. Jehoshaphat, son of Asa, walked in the way of Asa, his father, did not turn from it. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord, yet, notice this exception, like a footnote, a little asterisk, high places were not taken away. People still sacrificed and made offerings on the high places. It's like they had trouble getting rid of that. Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord all his days. The priest there was there guiding him. Nevertheless, high places were not taken away. The people kept worshiping on the high places. Amaziah, same thing. Second year of Joash, Amaziah, his son, started reigning. He did what was right. Not quite like David, though. See, there's almost like degrees this. He was a good guy. He did what was right, but he wasn't really 100% like David serving God. But he did basically like his dad did. And isn't that interesting that you have this kind of like, you know, you had David who was kind of the standard bearer, even though he was flawed, but he still set the standard for like being devoted to the Lord. And he was a good king, not quite like David, but more like his dad. You know, it's kind of like, you know, followed like that. But the people, the high place were not removed. They still worshiped there. His son, Azariah, same thing. He did what's right now as the Lord, like his dad. Nevertheless, high places were not taken away. Jotham, same thing. Almost verbatim, almost like cut and paste. And so we get down through all these kings. We finally come to Hezekiah. This is after Solomon. By the way, above Rehoboam up there would be Solomon. So you have Solomon, Rehoboam, all the way down. So you have to get all the way down to Hezekiah before anybody's going to finally do something about these high places. And of course, the kings I'm skipping over were just like all full on board idolatry. So even the good kings, it's like they got rid of the idols, but they never dealt with this issue of the high places. So you come to finally Hezekiah. Hezekiah, for the first time in Judah's history, actually, since Solomon introduced the practice or participated in it as a king, I think the people had always been doing it, but as a king, he went out and did it. Then all of his sons followed suit till you finally get to Hezekiah. And then notice what we're told about Hezekiah. In the third year of Hoshea, the son of Elah, king of Israel, Hezekiah, son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 when he began to reign. He reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Abby, daughter of Zechariah. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord according to all that David, his father, has done. So now he's like back in the David class of doing what's right. And it says he removed the high places, broke down the pillars, cut down the Asherah, broke in pieces the bronze serpent Moses had made for him. In those days, the people of Israel made offerings to it. It was called Nehushtan. There's another great lesson. I'm just going to save that for another day. Do you remember Nehushtan? That's an interesting one. Do you remember this bronze serpent? Tuck that away in the back of your mind, and we'll come back to that story some point down the road. That's a fascinating thing. But anyway, he got rid of that. And he dealt with these high places. So yay for Hezekiah. And as a result, notice the commendation that he is given. He trusted in the Lord, the God of Israel, so there was none like him among all the kings of Judah after him or those who were before him. For he held fast to the Lord. He did not depart from following him, but kept the commandments that the Lord had commanded Moses. That's the first time that's been said about one of these good kings. The rest of them, it was like, oh, he did good like his dad. He did good, not quite like David. He did good, but this guy, Hezekiah, we're told, he was true to the Lord, and he actually kept the law of Moses. And therefore, verse 7, the Lord was with him wherever he went. Remember when David said to Solomon, listen, do what God tells you, follow his rules, and God will be with you. And here we see it happening. The Lord was with him where he prospered. He rebelled against the king of Assyria, would not serve him. He struck down the Philistines as far as Gaza and its territory from the watchtower to the fortified city. So finally, we have somebody who just says, look, I'm going to follow the law of Moses. And we got to get rid of those high places. Now, the sad thing is, as good a king as he was, his son Manasseh was about the worst. And Manasseh, with a vengeance, goes after the idols, rebuilds the high places, engaged in all kinds of horrible, terrible things. And so we have to skip over Manasseh. But his son, Josiah, Manasseh's grandson, the last good king, also the only other of the good kings who dealt with these high places. So now he's taken over after his dad was about as bad as you could possibly be. Josiah shows up on the scene and begins to reign. And he took care of the high places for good. It said he deposed the priests whom the kings of Judah had ordained to make offerings in the high places at the cities of Judah and around Jerusalem, those also who burned incense to Baal, the sun, the moon, all that stuff. So you notice that the kings of Judah, down through the years, his dad and granddad and all the way back, not including Hezekiah, but had actually ordained certain priests. They developed this whole kind of spur, this religion of worshiping God at the high places, which was not in the law of Moses. There were priests dedicated to that. He said, you're all fired. We don't need any of that anymore. We're going to do things by the book. That's Josiah. Also, it says about him, he brought out all the priests of the cities of Judah and defiled the high places where the priests had made offerings from Geba to Beersheba. So I looked that up, and Geba is not far from Jerusalem. And remember that we're talking about kings of Judah. So the kingdom had been cut in half. And so Beersheba is way down at the bottom, near the bottom of the Dead Sea. So basically throughout the whole territory of Judah, I think is how we would say. A lot of times in the Old Testament, you'd hear them talk about from Dan to Beersheba. From Dan to Beersheba was the entirety of their territory, from the far north to the far south. From Geba to Beersheba is basically the territory of Judah. So he went through not just in Jerusalem and around there, but he went through all those towns in their territory and got rid of those high places and the priests who had been dedicated to worship there. And he defiled the high places. I think it's the next one. It's going to say he went up even into the north. But notice this verse. The king defiled the high places that were east of Jerusalem to the south of the mountain of corruption, which Solomon, the king of Israel, had built for Ashtoreth, the abomination of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, Milcom. Look at that. It's terrible. We started out with Solomon doing good, and here we have a reminder that Solomon turned out to do some terrible, terrible things. And finally, we have his great, 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 great grandson shows up on the scene, and he gets rid of all these things, some of which dated all the way back to Solomon himself, some of these high places. He gets rid of all that. And I guess I didn't paste it on here, but it also says that he went up into Samaria, into the northern part, even in Israel, outside of his territory, outside of his jurisdiction, and got rid of the high places. He was really totally devoted to the Lord to get rid of these high places because that was not what the Lord wanted. And so he gets this commendation. Before him, there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart and his soul and all his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor did any like him arise after him. What a wonderful thing to be said about him. And it's really simple what he did. Do you remember in his days, again, I don't want to get too far off track here, but we'll say that that'll be a lesson for later. But remember, they were cleaning out the temple. They found the book. They said, hey, we found something. You might be interested in this. And it was the book of the law. It had been lost and forgotten. And here's as simple as what he did. He said, this says we're supposed to be keeping a feast. This says we're supposed to. So he just like kept the directions. He followed the directions. He did what nobody does. He read the directions. And then he followed them. And that's for all that, he gets this awesome commendation. It says, no king like him who kept the law of Moses. He actually did what God said. And part of that included dealing with these high places. So let's make three applications of this, and the lesson will be yours. First of all, I suspect, although the Bible doesn't really tell us, why do the people have such a problem? Even when they tried to do what was right, they dealt with all of their problems, but they left those high places in place. It was only two kings that would actually tackle it. And I don't know. I don't know why. Why? Whenever they would get their heart in the right place and they said, we're going to serve God, they got rid of all the idols. They tore down the false gods. But it would say, but, there's all that little asterisk, a little footnote, but they kept their high places. I don't know. I'm only going to guess here. I'm totally speculating that it was simply a personal preference, convenience, you know, type of thing. It would save them the trouble of having to travel to the place that God said. If you had your own little local high place, and plus this you know, was a practice that had been going on for a long time. They just really had trouble getting rid of those high places. But there's an important principle we need to know. 1 Samuel 15, verse 22. This is when King Saul, so back to backing up in time here, saved some animals alive he was supposed to destroy. God gave him directions. Kill all those things. He saved some. Samuel shows up. He says, Saul, why do I hear all this bleeding of the sheep? And why do I hear these animals making all this noise? Weren't you supposed to kill all that stuff? And you remember that Saul said, oh, yeah, well, I saved all that because I was going to worship God with it. I saved those things to offer them to God. And Samuel says to him in 1 Samuel 15, 22, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is the sin of divination, presumption as iniquity and idolatry. So there's a principle there I think we need to really take in and consider. It's easy to fall into the thought process, which I think is truly born out of pride. But here's a thought process that says, you know, what God really wants. What God really wants is for us to worship him. And as long as we are offering God something, he's going to love it. As long as we are doing something to glorify God, if that's my goal, if my goal is to honor God, he's going to just be happy with whatever I do. But Samuel says something interesting in Saul. He says, actually, there's something more important to God. Yes, he likes worship. Yes, he wants you to worship. But even more important than that, what God wants is obedience. It is more important to be obedient than even to worship. So first and foremost, he says, listen. God wants you to listen. He wants you to obey rather than sacrifice, to hearken or listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is a sin of divination. Presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. Presumption is basically saying, like, well, I know what God would like. I'm going to presume to know what God would want. I'm going to do my own thing, and God's just going to be happy with it. He said that's just a cousin, basically, to idolatry. Just kind of making up my own thing and assuming that God's going to love it is like I'm... And you can see how the people, Solomon included, once they veered away from God's instructions, and they said, yeah, I know that God said go over there, but I'm going to go over here. I'm still worshiping God. I'm worshiping the one true God. I'm not worshiping any false gods, but I'm doing my own thing up here on this hill. Once you start down that path, it's kind of a slippery slope upward. It's going up to the hill. It's going to the top of the hill. But it's basically the idea that I can do whatever. I'll do things my way. I'm still worshiping God, but I'm just going to do it kind of my own way. And that so easily leads us away from the path that God, that, you know, it's a step away from the directions that he gave. And so Samuel is saying to Saul here, it's important that you obey. And David began, but as he's basically dying, he calls in Solomon and says, here's how you can be successful. Just do what God says. Just obey what's written in the book. It's not that hard. And yet, as we can see, out of all those kings, there's really only two of them that truly devoted themselves to just following the book. There were some good ones, but only two of them actually said, let's do things by the book. And that's, of course, kind of tragic for their sake. Secondly, tradition is not authority. By the time Hezekiah shows up on the scene, the first one to actually deal with those high places, it had been 200-ish, I think a little more, years since Solomon. So that's like, you know, George Washington to today, give or take, you know, roundabout 200-plus years now. But, you know, a long time. For a long time, they had been going up on those hilltops to worship. And even in the good days, even when the good kings came, they kept going up there on their high places to worship. But did that mean that it became what God wanted them to do? It took somebody finally saying, hey, look, I'm looking here at the book, and the book says we're supposed to go to this place. And, you know, the book says we're supposed to do this and this and this. We need to do things the way the book says. So just because something's been done a long, long time, and just because some very fine, good people have done it, doesn't mean it's necessarily what God desires. Because there was a long list of good kings who still had the little asterisk by their name. They didn't deal with the high places. And so just because people who before us, previous generations, good folks, did things a certain way, does not mean that's what God... We have to keep constantly coming back to the book and just say, what does the book say? That's the idea of being of restoration and being a reformer, being a restorer, is to kind of constantly, each generation that comes along. And I challenge you young folks, don't just assume that just because we've done things a certain way forever, that's got to be the way it is. You keep going back to the book. You keep, generation after generation comes and goes. Go back to the book. What do they say? What are we supposed to do? That's how we can be pleasing. Colossians 3:17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. So we honor God when we have the attitude of Hezekiah, when we have the attitude of Josiah that says, I want to find the book. I want to do what God says. I want to be pleasing to him. I want to put obedience first and foremost, and then everything else follows after that. And just like David said to Solomon, if you do that, you can't go wrong, and God will be with you, and he'll be pleased with you. You will glorify him because you'll be doing things his way, not doing things your own way. That's the lesson for this evening. I'm looking forward to this diving into these old stories. There's some great lessons for us to learn, and I hope that you'll be benefited by them as well. If there's someone here tonight who has something in your life that you need to make right, we want to give you that opportunity, and if we can help, please let us know as we stand and sing.